The more I look, the more it seems they got it wrong. Yes, we'll use the nice, vague, all-encompassing term, they. Going to talk about a few little deep dives I've gone on recently in this edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast after taking a couple of weeks off around America's birthday. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Let me acknowledge a couple of sponsors that pay for the podcast so you don't have to. Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. When you are in need of legal assistance, you can reach out to them for a free consult to see if their full service covers your legal need. 813-902-3576 or visit brandonlegalgroup.com. It has been 2 years since Florida Governor Ron DeSantis eliminated permanent alimony from law in the state of Florida. There are other forms of alimony, but there is no permanent alimony. So if you are an adult male and a state of Florida resident, and you continue to pay permanent alimony, the law has been on your side now for over 2 years. Brandon Legal Group can help reduce or potentially eliminate future permanent alimony payments because that's the law. 813-902-3576 or visit brandonlegalgroup.com. Plantation Palms Golf Club in Land O'Lakes is run by Jesse Pratt, a general manager who cares about every aspect of the property, whether it is the lighted driving range, the 18-hole championship course with new tee boxes on 7 and 17, two par threes, the restaurant and bar, the special events that take place on a weekly basis in the restaurant and bar, including trivia nights on Thursday, the Mulligan's Mini Golf, the restaurant is called Mulligan's, the mini golf is now called Mulligan's Mini Golf. It has some new statues that stand out, some awesome music via the stereo system. The turf was recently upgraded for the mini golf, and there is now a monthly mini golf tournament. It's not something where you just show up on a particular day and time and compete against others. I've used their mini golf as part of multiple Todd Wright Tour events in addition to playing the championship course. This doesn't work like that. You can show up anytime you want, pay to play your mini golf round, and submit your score. And at the end of the month, prizes will be awarded. Please putt with integrity on the mini golf, just as you would play the championship course. A lot going on at Plantation Palms Golf Club, an annual host of the Todd Wright Tour. For tee times and more information, visit plantationpalms.net. My email, specifically for golf stuff, is toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. Anything not golf related, send it to wright.todd@yahoo.com. I've been going on deep dives recently when something comes into my mind that's a talking point and I want to know more. And maybe my question is more significant than why the talking point ever came in front of me. And one of the connections of some of these recent talking points I find interesting. It almost makes me think, is this a series? Could there be more here? Or is it just me connecting the dots? So it's a handful of football things. It started with, and I've known this for a while, when the Cowboys won their first Super Bowl, Super Bowl VI, they dominated the Miami Dolphins to end the 1971 season. The MVP of that Super Bowl was Roger Staubach. And for most people, that's where it ends. they're told, yep, we know the Cowboys won 5 Super Bowls. That's the first one they won the year after they lost Super Bowl 5 to the Baltimore Colts. And Roger Staubach was the MVP. That's no surprise. And that's it. That's all most people need to know about Super Bowl VI. There is a lot more there, especially from a Cowboy standpoint. But something that I always thought was interesting was the debate about the MVP. Now, this comes a year after the Cowboys had the MVP despite losing Super Bowl V, which still threw 59 Super Bowls, has never happened again. The Super Bowl MVP has only come from the losing team one time, and that was Super Bowl V, and that was Hall of Fame linebacker Chuck Howley. Super Bowl VI, you just say, well, Roger Staubach was MVP. And honestly, even people that hate the Cowboys are probably like, yeah, I'm good with that. Staubach's numbers weren't great. And granted, we were at an entirely different time in football, where the forward pass didn't dominate the game. Staubach was very good at it. He was ahead of his time. But if you go back, and I welcome you to do so, and you look at Roger Staubach's statistics from Super Bowl VI, they're not going to stand out. Not bad. They don't scream MVP. Now I get you can fall back on, hey, it's Roger Staubach. It's the quarterback. It's the easy choice. It's the safe choice, which seems to be what happened. Because back then, MVP of the Super Bowl was chosen by one person, not the commissioner of the NFL. It was chosen by the editor-in-chief of a magazine called Sport. I'm old enough to remember this magazine. This magazine wasn't as significant to me as Sports Illustrated. It also wasn't as significant as some other magazines or printed materials that I read growing up on sports. But I knew about Sport Magazine, but it was a bigger deal to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated or later a Wheaties box. So Sport Magazine had control over the Super Bowl MVP. Not the league, Sport Magazine. The editor-in-chief chose Roger Staubach. And apparently, he was advised to choose Dwayne Thomas, running back for the Dallas Cowboys, who was a pain in the ass. Dwayne didn't like anything about anything. West Texas running back, didn't like Coach Landry, didn't like playing for the Cowboys, didn't like talking to reporters. He was very good at running the football. Look at his stats and tell me what you see. Some reports say Dwayne Thomas won the vote. The problem is, there was no official vote. The editor-in-chief of Sport Magazine chose the MVP. He may have, this editor-in-chief, asked a few of his friends in the press box, hey, tell me who you think should be MVP. You know, write it down and let me know. Which led to talk that Dwayne Thomas was their choice. But he was thinking about the best interest of Sport Magazine, which needed the cooperation of the MVP to help represent their brand, and said, yeah, I'm not dealing with that guy. So that editor-in-chief went rogue and said, Roger Staubach, you're my guy. You are MVP of Super Bowl VI. Fast forward a year to Super Bowl VII. And I recently enjoyed a book called 17-0. 96% of this book is about everything that comprised the Miami Dolphins' perfect season. The lead up to it, how players got there, how Shula got there, what a cheap son of a bitch Joe Robbie was. And 4% weaves its way into politics. It's very odd. But that's what the 30-second fast forward button is for on my Audible system in listening to the audiobook. There was a similar problem with MVP of Super Bowl VII, where the Dolphins defeated the Redskins 14-7 to complete the NFL's still to date only perfect season. Jake Scott won MVP of that game. And guess what? The rules for who chose MVP were still the same. The person was different. Sport Magazine had a different editor-in-chief. The previous year, it's not a household name. I looked it up. I don't remember it. He was no longer the editor-in-chief of Sport Magazine. I have no idea if he called the Staubach shot as opposed to Dwayne Thomas because he knew, I'm not going to do this next year, so screw it. I'm giving it to Roger Staubach since I'm not going to be here next year anyway. Or if his decision led to him being replaced as editor-in-chief of Sport Magazine by a more household name that many of us came to know, named Dick Schaap. Yes, that Dick Schaap. Some of you may only know him as Jeremy Schaap's dad. Dick Schaap, for years when I worked for ESPN, also anchored a staple of weekend morning programming called the Sports Reporters, and is considered by many to be one of the true pros of the sports media business for what he represented and for how he would present things. That said, in his first year as editor-in-chief of Sport Magazine, Dick had the final call on MVP of Super Bowl VII, which, as I learned in the book and deduced, Super Bowl III gets a lot of attention for the genesis of getting the ball rolling on pro football and what it turned into. Because AFL's Jets with Broadway Joe beat Don Shula's Colts as a near 20-point underdog. Namath guaranteed the victory and on from there. Super Bowl VII was an enormous deal, with the Dolphins going in undefeated, and they weren't exactly dominant in the two playoff games to get to that point, playing the AFC Championship game on the road, despite being 15-0. The Steelers only hosting it because of the immaculate reception the week before. And the Redskins, if not for an odd end to a week three game against the stinky Patriots, could have also been undefeated coming into that Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was played in LA. Granted, not the first time this game had been played there, but it had a lot going for it. It even had the 2 weeks between conference title games and the Super Bowl itself. So Dick Schaap is the new editor-in-chief of Sport Magazine. So he gets to pick Super Bowl MVP, just like the editor-in-chief before him chose Roger Staubach and not Dwayne Thomas as MVP of Super Bowl VI. Dick's a young guy, and apparently Dick liked to have a good time. The night before, according to the book 17-0, Dick was out late having more than a few. Wasn't exactly on his game for the next day. This is back when the Super Bowl was played in the afternoon. And was obviously hungover while watching the game in the press box. So much so that he also was nodding off while the game was being played in the press box, catching up on a little nappy poo to try and snap out of his hangover. Jake Scott had 2 picks in the game. Those are big plays. Either Schaap was awake for those plays or simply was able to look at a stat sheet and say, that's my MVP. While Dick was sleeping off his hangover, the great Manny Fernandez, one of my favorite guys from the 72 Dolphins, was wreaking havoc on the Redskins from his defensive line position. Earlier in the year, Manny played a game with pneumonia and had 20 tackles. He hadn't practiced all week. He showed up from the hospital in time for the game, made 20 tackles, and after the game, went right back to the hospital. Manny in this game had 17 tackles and a sack, and apparently doesn't even remember the last 8 minutes of the game because of a blow that he took while making one of those 17 tackles or the sack. Schaap wasn't awake for enough of this to know how Manny Fernandez had dominated the line of scrimmage as the Redskins offense, led by Billy Kilmer, was able to do next to nothing. The Redskins' only points came late in the game when Garo Yepremian did what Garo Yepremian does. And actually, Garo almost did the same thing late in the regular season, and Don Shula brushed it off as a one-off rather than addressing it. It was addressed in the 73 training camp. Garo, if you see a ball on the ground and you are not allowed to kick it, you fall on it. You do not pick it up. So Manny Fernandez, by all rights, and Jake Scott has acknowledged this, was the deserving MVP of Super Bowl VII. So here we are in back-to-back years. Super Bowl VI Roger Staubach gets it. Dwayne Thomas should have. Super Bowl VII, Jake Scott gets it. Manny Fernandez should have. And we look at the reasons why. This falls in line with a couple other things that have come across my radar recently. When I found out the Buccaneers were one of five teams that have never won a Coach of the Year award, and some would say it's six because the Jets won an AFL Coach of the Year award, that was Weeb Eubank, but never as a member of the full-fledged member of the NFL. But it's like, okay, the Jets have a Coach of the Year in their history. But it technically was when they were honored with an AFL Coach of the Year award. The Bucs are one of five to have none. Some would say, well, what about Gruden? Some would say, what about Dungy? I say, are you kidding on John McKay? After 26 straight losses to start the franchise that everyone, including Johnny Carson, was talking about, a little over a year later, the Bucs win the division and go to the playoffs, and John McKay is not Coach of the Year? Who the hell was? And it's not like the Bucs weren't getting attention in 79, and even from Carson. They started the year 5-0. They were on the cover of Sports Illustrated twice that year. Once when they beat the Rams, which I believe was the Week 4 game. The headline was unbeaten, untied, and unbelievable. And then they were on the cover after winning their divisional playoff game at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe the headline was Oh Those Upsets, and it was one of my favorite Buccaneers who died way too young, Ricky Bell, who was on the cover, the running back from USC. So if John McKay in 79 doesn't win Coach of the Year, who does? This is less about one person making the vote, as there were multiple people voting. The 79 NFL Coach of the Year was Jack Pardee. Okay, I know who that is. Why was it Jack Pardee? Here's what Jack Pardee did. He was the coach of the Washington Redskins. They went 10-6. Okay. John McKay went 10-6. So I don't see a reason why Jack won there. Jack Pardee the previous year with the Redskins was 8-8. Okay. So it's a two-game improvement. McKay the year before, thankfully it wasn't still a restart of 0-26. I think the Bucs won 5 in 78. So that's less than the 8 that Pardee won. So Pardee doesn't beat McKay there. The Bucs won the division, made the playoffs. The Redskins didn't win the division, blew a 13-point lead the last week of the regular season to the Dallas Cowboys, and missed the playoffs entirely. So how the hell was Jack Pardee voted Coach of the Year in 79 over John McKay? His team didn't improve by more than McKay's did. McKay was two to three years removed from 0-26. Pardee wasn't. McKay won the same number of regular season games, including the last game of the year, 3-0 in a deluge at the Olsen Burrow over the Chiefs to win the division that day. I know I was in attendance as a kid watching under a piece of white plastic for most of the game, taken by a friend of my grandparents to the game, sat in the lower corner of the end zone, 3-0, Bucks beat Chiefs. I was there. Amazingly, I didn't get sick from sitting out in the rain, all that. Redskins blow 13-point lead last regular season game at home to the Cowboys. Don't win division. Don't make the playoffs. And one more. 2016 Heisman. Maybe I'll touch on that a little more next time. Yeah, you know I'm not a Lamar Jackson fan. I sure as hell am not a Deshaun Watson fan. But the more I look at that one, let me just offer you this. I question whether Lamar Jackson should have won the 2016 Heisman. And it wasn't close. But why? Also, let's introduce no one that I know of. There might have been people close to Clemson football who at the time knew Deshaun Watson, had some interesting behavioral choices around female massage therapists or around women in general. I didn't. I simply knew him as the quarterback for Dabo Swinney on a damn good Clemson team, which went on to win the national title, beat Alabama. That was a big deal. Louisville lost their last three games of that season, including their last two regular season games, and where Lamar should have been showcasing his talents late in the season to solidify the Heisman Trophy, he and Louisville laid big eggs, especially against Houston. Go back and watch the highlights. Oh, one more. Head-to-head, Clemson beat Louisville. High-profile October game. Good game. Deshaun beat Lamar head-to-head. Deshaun won national title. And the numbers? Lamar's rushing numbers were fantastic. Deshaun led the ACC in passing, yards, and touchdowns. If you total Deshaun's passing and rushing, yards and touchdowns, and you total Lamar's passing yards and touchdowns with his rushing yards and touchdowns, it's basically a push. Why did Lamar win the Heisman? Again, in all these cases, they got it wrong. What do you think? Write.Todd@yahoo.com. Write.Todd@yahoo.com. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.